It's Wednesday, October 29th, 2008, and you're watching Endpoint TV.
Welcome to Endpoint TV. This is your host, Ron Jacobs, and today I'm here with Brian. Brian, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Brian Losgen. I'm a principal consultant with Neudesic. We are a systems integrator, a custom app dev company. I'm based in Southern California, San Diego. I'm a five-time BizTalk Server MVP, and I'm honored to be a member of the Connected Systems Advisors Group.
Yeah, so this week we had a whole bunch of you guys up here mm-hmm. and kind of showing all the stuff that people are just now seeing at the PDC. Mm-hmm. And you kind of had some chance to do the hands-on labs and listen to a lot of people, have a lot of discussion about it. I think this is going to be a shock to a lot of people, don't you?
I really do. I can't believe the magnitude of it, and we've had, because of my capacity as a member of the Connected Systems Advisors Group, I've been involved in this for some time, and I've seen the progression. I've seen the progression of the message. I've seen the vision, the whole vision, the big picture, and I'm absolutely blown away by what I think is the ultimate end goal here. It's a very ambitious undertaking, but it will really leapfrog development forward, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So now I'm particularly interested in your reactions to the new workflow and WCF stuff that we talked about this week. What did you think about that?
So workflow, it's now version 3.0 pretty well, right? Almost. I mean, it really brings a lot of richness now. I like the new, how easy it becomes to compose things together. Mm-hmm. I like the designer. I like the way the arrows kind of move to show you insertion points.
A new WPF designer, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really nice, and it truly makes it easier for the first time, and there's tighter integration now between WCF and WF. So it really makes it easier to do things like composite applications that are WF-based.
Now, you've been a BizTalk guy for a long time, so you're kind of used to, you know, orchestrations and drawing things. But, I mean, a lot of people's reaction is like, why do I want to program with pictures? You know, I'm drawing these diagrams. I just write some C-sharp code or whatever. I mean, how do you react to that?
Right. So I'm used to that because mm-hmm. I get that reaction when I start talking about BizTalk, too. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm a developer. I live in a code editor. I don't want to draw pictures. That kind of, it's not as hardcore.
Yeah. Right?
I lose something. I give something up. I lose a bit of myself when I start doing that. But, you know, I'm a very visual person.
Right.
And when I engage with a new client or something like that, and we start talking about applications, it really doesn't take very long before I fire up Visio or I grab a whiteboard marker and off we go, we're diagramming. Mm-hmm. So for me, the ability to communicate things via pictures is a much better way of doing it than any other way.
Yeah.
At least that way you can make sure everyone's sharing the same view of the world. What they've done with the Oslo modeling platform, though, I didn't really get it until this week. So I've, mm-hmm. and this is going to be a communications challenge, I believe, because people are going to have to make a little bit of a leap here. Because typically when I thought about models, I would think in the way things used to be. They used to be kind of static things, and maybe the tool would just generate an application from your model. It would look at the picture and emit code.
Right.
Or sometimes there's round tripping, mm-hmm. right? So it could also consume the code back, picking up any changes, and that would be reflected in the visual surface. However, when I started delving and learning about Oslo, there was this thing called M, the modeling language. And I couldn't understand why we needed a textual representation of something that was very visual. Of course, in BizTalk, we have Xlang, mm-hmm. right, which is the same thing. It's sort of the same. It's an XML dialect that describes an orchestration.
Right.
So there you're also kind of converting a visual thing to a textual representation. However, with the M language, they've gone a whole lot further than that.
Mm.
At first, I really didn't get it. And I've been through several SDRs now and had lots of exposure. And this week, I finally got it. Because what they've done is they've given us the ability to not just take that picture and show it this way, show it as a textual representation, but they've given us language where we can create our own domain-specific languages. We can create grammars. And from that, that is the application. The model is the application.
And that's a really powerful thing to get right there. It's not that, you know, the old problem with models was that the models were kind of irrelevant after the early parts, right? I mean, yeah, you made the model, and it became slowly more less and less relevant.
Right.
But, I mean, isn't, you know, complexity is one of the things we all grapple with in software. It's like, yeah, sure, if you're the guy that wrote it, you know, no problem. I get it, right? But then you leave, you move on, some new guy comes in, he's looking at this mountain of code, and he's trying to understand it, and it becomes harder and harder to maintain and evolve over time.
Sure.
So do you think the models really help that problem?
Oh, I think they do. And it's not the transition from person to person, but it's even you. If you come back a year after the fact and try to understand what you did before, sometimes you have to kind of reacquaint yourself with the application, especially if it's a complex solution or you're composing a bunch of services together. The models really help that because we have this common textual representation now that lives inside the repository. And from that, Microsoft has created different design surfaces around it. Some are visual, or some are textual, and there's the ability to create additional ones. So what really made Oslo clearer to me, and what really made me understand why we have this language, is when I started thinking of Oslo as an onion. There's this central core, which is the repository and the modeling language, and then you build up tooling around the edges. Now, some past repository efforts I've seen have had kind of blob-type representations of the data in the repository. Where the repository here in Oslo differs from that is that there's no opaqueness like that. Mm. These are just tables that are created in SQL.
And you can write your own queries against them and do whatever you want.
You can write your queries, you can write tools that run against that data. And maybe people will need something like that, like compare two repositories. There's a perfect third-party tool, right? Compare two repositories and give me some kind of a representation or report of what the differences are between the two.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the other part of the big deal here with the modeling, okay, is because people will say, well, look, you know, we've been getting along just fine. We're writing stuff. It's getting, our work's getting done. There's this big shift to the cloud. You know, everybody's going, oh, it's the cloud. It's cloud is here, right? And of course, Microsoft is investing heavily in the cloud, producing a lot of services there. I kind of think of this the way that, like, maybe 10 years ago, if you were going to host a web server, you might do it yourself, right? You get your little server set up and kind of open the ports and do it. But today it's like, no question, you're going to have it hosted.
Absolutely.
And it kind of seems to me that we're moving that direction with services and a lot of business logic, maybe. Even applications that are maybe entirely internal, you might just say, well, heck, I'm going to put it in the cloud because it's easier.
Sure. It's a lot easier because it takes a lot of specialized expertise to do the proper care and feeding of a vast data center. So I think there definitely will be a migration. Some of the things that we see today as being, we just think of it, right, as being on-premise software. I think there will be a migration of some of that into the cloud. I don't think we'll see everything move into the cloud.
Yeah.
But even if you look at what people are doing today with payroll systems, with Salesforce.com, things like that, I mean, we are seeing that trend already. And then you get the internet scale issue, right? If I were to create some phenomenal e-commerce, this phenomenal new product, and I want to sell it through my site, and it gets picked up by some major websites, then all of a sudden I've got millions of people banging on my door.
Right.
Well, I just have one server out there. It's not going to work very well. But with this notion of provisioning on demand and supplying the infrastructure on demand, it's a very powerful concept.
See, and I think, to me, this is one of the big drivers here of the model. Because, you know, you just had to know, like we went through this with web hosting. If I had the server on-premise, you know, and I want to do some fancy thing with, you know, COM objects or ISAPI filters or whatever, I mean, I can do whatever I want. It's my box, right? If I move out to the cloud, they say, well, hey, you can do that on our box. If you know, we share you with a lot of other sites, and you know, you can't do that on our box. You have to live in our sandbox. You know, so we have a sandbox environment. You know, you have to live in it. And I think we're going to face the same kind of challenges about you can't just do anything like you can now when it's on your box. And I think the models help us to give us a way to kind of live in that sandbox. Don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, I absolutely do. And without virtualization, we probably wouldn't even be having this conversation. There probably wouldn't be the massive investments that are being made, because virtualization just makes it all possible and achievable.
Yeah, yeah, but even I think even with virtualization, they're still going to, you know, kind of limit what you can do in the virtual environment.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah, because they want to make sure you're not crashing the virtual image, you know,
right,
and doing nasty things there or whatever, right? But I'm you know, really the rich tie-in to the management and monitoring is very attractive to me. I mean, I have a web host in the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many server boxes it runs on or when its limits are. I don't even think about it. It's not a headache to me. I just know that if I need more, I call them up and say, give me more, and it's
right,
done, right? I mean, that's what we should have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And right now, people that are, where big challenges lie, are people that are very seasonal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So greeting cards, flowers, things like that, where they get these huge surges at certain times of the year, and the rest of the year it's kind of flat and predictable. Those people typically have to plan for the worst it's going to get. So they have to plan for the top of that peak and
yeah,
hope that it doesn't go over that peak. So that's the way they have to do it today.
But you know, you've worked on a lot of enterprise projects. Do you think enterprises have the same kind of spikes? I mean, like end of the month or end of the quarter, those kind of... Does it approach anything like that?
Not the same kind of scale,
mm-hmm,
right? Because you don't have millions, potentially, of people making service invocations or using a website.
Right. But do you think, though, that, you know, some of these enterprise guys you've worked with, these CIOs and these kind of guys, are they looking at this cloud thinking, yeah, baby, I want to go there, or are they a little worried about it, or what do
you
think they're thinking?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it all plays out. I think there will be some initial resistance to it,
mm-hmm,
simply because it is a mind shift. Typically, we throw up our firewalls, and all of our data is inside that. And that's going to have to change to some degree. Some of the data is going to have to migrate up into the cloud, and this is where I think some enterprises are going to have a little bit of heartburn about that,
mm,
especially if they're dealing with sensitive or potentially sensitive information that may or may not have regulatory repercussions or healthcare information, things like that.
You know what, though? I think the declarative nature of the models actually helps this problem.
Yeah.
I mean, because when you think about it, if you're, you know, writing all this code inside the enterprise, maybe you got one app team that really gets it, right? So they're careful about their data, they're encrypting it, they're taking care of all the details, you know, doing the proper security. And you got another team that just doesn't get it. They're leaving things wide open, you know, they're copying social security numbers onto portable hard drives that get stolen out of cars and things
right,
like that, you know?
Right.
And so your compliance is difficult to manage and monitor when everything's imperative. You know, you're writing all this code and you go to the team, you go, what? Do you have this secure? And they say, well, yeah, of course, you know, but you don't really know until they go through it line by line. But if you were using a more declarative model where the infrastructure guarantees that if you declare it this way, it's going to happen.
Right.
And then you could look in that repository. You could run a report over the repository and
exactly,
say, is everybody doing that?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Yeah. You can, because once it moves to be more declarative, then you have the ability to do a lot of things with that data. Because if you look right now, a lot of the stuff we do doesn't reside in our data. A lot of the logic that we do resides in code, and it's buried away, and it's tucked away in source control systems, and binaries get deployed. But if you have this sitting as data, as declarative code, if you will,
mm-hmm,
then you have the ability to do a lot of analysis and iterate over that and do interesting things with the data, such as potentially compliance checking.
See, and that's one thing I think that, you know, when you talk to the average coder, right, they're out there like, I just want to write some code.
Right.
They're not thinking about these larger meta issues, you know. They're not thinking about how does the company verify that what you do complies with Sarbanes-Oxley and all that. They just don't think about it. They're just like, leave me alone, I'm going to spew out some code here.
Right, and then we'll do an audit at some point, and then you'll show me what I did wrong. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But this way, it's a cleaner way of doing it, and it's a more secure way of doing it, because you know you didn't miss a C# file somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, well, thanks so much, Brian, for joining me today, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the PDC. For Endpoint TV, I'm Ron Jacobs.